We continue our reflection on the three traditional, shall we say, enemies of us: the world, the flesh, and the devil. In this particular Mass today, we focus on the flesh. The flesh, Sart, understood as that source of weakness. Notice when we reflected in the first talk about how in the original sin, Adam truly gave away his strength when he would not rise up and defend Eve, would not pour out his life for the other, would not bestow life, as we talked about. He gave away his strength. And one of the effects of original sin is this reality that the flesh is that there's a part of all of us that wants to do the same. We want to give away our strength. It is sinful. It's our fallen human nature. To put bluntly, our flesh, if you will, not necessarily understood as this, but the flesh wants the easy way out. Got to write a homily this Sunday. Well, you know what? Cleaning the bathroom never looks so good. Or what about when I have a teacher that I need to correct, that perhaps needs some guidance? It's just easier. I'll email her, or I'll email him. I'll let him have it. Well, to put it bluntly, the way of the flesh is being a wuss. In Romans chapter 8, we hear Paul say, "For I do not do the good I want, but I do the evil I do not want." When I asked that question yesterday, where is my power? If our power is in the flesh, what St. Paul says is so very true. It's why in the last conference I mentioned, and I apologize, I was actually racing through the last part of it because I looked at the clock and realized I'd already been going for way too long. And so I apologize. But in the end, I briefly touched on it. And that is that when we seek our strength in ourselves, when we don't delve into our wound, our brokenness, if you will, then it is self-serving. Our power is only ourself. And that power, we know, because of original sin, is weak. And it is not our true power. As I mentioned, God bestows on us our identity, our power, in the gifts and in the way he has created us. The biggest lie we face, though, and this I want to develop a little bit more because it has so much to do with this idea of the flesh. The biggest lie we face is truly believing that we are our sin. We are our sin. That is the lie that we in the flesh are tempted to believe, especially if a person is struggling with some particular habitual sin. We begin to define ourselves by that sin. That's why I asked you that question in the last conference. What do you think God sees when he looks at you? And especially I find this true in my priesthood when working with people, that it is really especially true, pardon the pun, when it is sins of the flesh. Those seem to be ones that we really identify ourselves with. But why is this a lie? Because in baptism, we have become a new creation. Our soul is changed. An image that I use that is truly a Father Schweiger original, so if you don't like it, that's okay. It's, you know, you're not committing any, you know, violation against the faith or anything. If you like it, great. Credit the Holy Spirit for inspiring me. But the way I see it, and that I think really applies to this idea, is that in the moment of our conception, we are a lump of clay. God creates a lump of clay. Now, if you take water and you pour water on a lump of clay, what happens? The water runs off. Now, I had a very visceral and very visual example of this, and maybe this is why it came out. When I was in eighth grade, those of you who have children, imagine an eighth grade boy in art class with 13 other boys, given a lump of clay and we put it on top of the pottery wheel. And the poor art teacher's up front trying to teach some particular, you know, theoretical thing. And for some strange reason that I do not understand to this day, she had us spinning that clay as she was trying to present whatever the topic was about clay. So here we are. They were not electric. They were the old pump versions. So you have 14 boys wailing on this pump action. And what would any self-respecting 14, 15-year-old, well, 8th grade, so 14-year-old, what self-respecting 14-year-old boy would not try to make his pottery wheel spin faster than the guy next to him? I mean, come on, we're a bunch of 14-year-old boys. So we are all wailing on this thing, 14 of us, and they're not quiet. As she's up in the front, I have no clue what she was even talking about. And every once in a while, we just suddenly hear, "Wet your clay!" And so we had, even better for 14-year-old boys, a pot of water that was attached to the side of the pottery wheel table. So as you're wailing on the pottery wheel, the whole table is shaking, the water is flopping, and we're supposed to wet the clay. I'm willing to bet you that you would imagine how much of the water actually got on the clay and how much got it on the three people next to you. It was an interesting scene. But that's what we are. We're the lump of clay. And God pours his love on us. And he keeps us moist and he keeps us malleable. But in our baptism, he takes that lump of clay and he takes the divine fist and he goes into that clay and he punches down into it. Now, when I was in that class, we had to make a vase or vase or whatever. I think she said vase. And again, 14-year-old boys. So I'm like wailing on it with my fist, and it looks like a blob of clay with a hole in it. But God is the divine potter. And so he shapes and he forms in our baptism. And he creates this incredible cup. So now when he pours his grace, what happens? It resides in the clay. The cup holds the water. When God bestows our identity on us, in baptism, we are a new creation. We're no longer a lump of clay. We are a new thing, a new reality. We are a cup, and we hold the strength of God who pours that into us. Just as he did Adam, he breathes into us his power and his strength. And we are container of that strength. That is what I mean when I say we are not our sin. We are a new creation. Our souls have been changed. The flesh is the false self or the imposter. It's the lie. But the second lie that we believe, in addition to that first lie, which is that we define ourselves by our sin, the second lie is that we're weak. Sin is too much. The sin's too engraved. You are the sin. You can't overcome that. Satan throws that at us all the time. I used to tell my students a story when I taught first 16 years of my priesthood. I taught in high school, in addition to all my other assignments. And I used to tell this to the freshmen. I'd ask them, and I'd look at them, and I'd say, and freshmen love this kind of question, I'd say, "How do you eat an elephant?" And they go, "Father, you can't eat an elephant." I'm like, "Why not?" "Father, have you seen an elephant?" I'm like, "You betcha. How do you eat it?" And they always said, "Can't be done." And I said, "Oh, but it can be." And they're like, "Oh, is this one of those jokes about an elephant in a refrigerator?" I'm like, no. "How do you eat an elephant?" And they just get all in a lather. "You can't do it, Father. It's 6,000 pounds. You can't eat an elephant." I says, "I beg to differ." I said, "How do you eat an elephant?" And I continue to string this out until finally they are so frustrated, which is the point of the activity, is to get them to that point of frustration. And I finally say, "The way you eat an elephant is one bite at a time." I didn't say how long it takes. I said, "How do you eat an elephant?" "You eat it one bite at a time." So often our sins are that elephant. All we see is the elephant. There's no way. I can't eat that elephant. There's no way. And so we give up. It's the lie that Satan tells us. We are a new creation. Our soul has been changed. We are not our sin. We are what God has created us to be. And we're not too weak. Because God has poured his life, breathed his life into us. And remember, what did Adam do after God breathed his life into him? He went out and he tamed the earth. He named all the animals. Be fruitful and multiply. Subdue the earth. Create. Because he was in the image and likeness of God. And so are you and I. The flesh tries to convince us to take the easy way out. It tries to convince us that the sin is too big. It tries to convince us that we are that sin. So how do we fight the flesh? How do we eat one bite at a time? How do we fight the false self, the cowardice, the self-preservation that comes? And I would tell you that it is in the daily details of our life. Too often we think that the spiritual life is about this monster battle once in a lifetime. The spiritual battle, the battle to discover our strength, is in the daily life. It's discovering our strength in the daily things. And you know what's fascinating? I was recently doing some reading about brain chemistry, and I'm thinking, you're probably thinking to yourself, what does brain chemistry have to do with this? Everything to do with it. Remember, God created us. He doesn't just create our soul, he created us. Body and soul. He made our bodies the way they are. In the brain chemistry, there is a chemical called dopamine. I'm sure you've heard of it before. It is the reward, shall we say, chemical. It's the one that gives us a reward, that sense of, hey, euphoria, things are going good. When we do small daily things, it's like an espresso shot of dopamine. And the more you do of those small daily things, the more that they have found that the research about perseverance backs that up. It's why Mother Teresa talked about it's in the day-to-day. It's why all the spiritual writers always talk about it's in the day-to-day that we find our holiness, that we find our strength. Because as our brain tastes that dopamine, it wants more. And so it is with those daily espresso shots that we're able to grow in perseverance. Our brain, our bodies support the spiritual truth. We eat that elephant one bite at a time. It really is that simple. We overcome the flesh one bite at a time. Our brain chemistry backs that up. Everything about us backs that up. But it starts with that decision. I am not my sin. That is not who God sees when he sees me. Now notice, I'm not saying, oh, my sin doesn't matter. I didn't say that. Your sin matters greatly. Somebody had to die on a cross for them. They are epically important. But they're not who you are. God has created you in his image and likeness. And he has a divine plan for you and for me. And that plan frees us, like Father Barron was talking this morning. That was a little bit of divine providence there, his talk this morning. Exactly. We don't have to give away our strength as Adam did. Jesus redeemed us, bought us back. And so we can possess our strength, our power. Where is my power? Where is my strength? What makes me fully alive? What brings me passion? Not just the momentary passion, not just that espresso hit, but what brings us that deeper tranquility of soul? where everything is right. If you've ever, I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but have you ever been listening to music performed live? And maybe this is just something that's particular to me, but maybe you couldn't hit the broadside of a barn with a tune if you, you know, were standing 3 inches from it. But if you've ever been sitting listening to somebody play or sing, and they're half a step off, whether it's in beat or in tone, it's like something's just not quite right. It's just off. Now, sometimes that's the intended effect, but most of the time it's not. And you're just like, there's not a tranquility of soul there. There's not a peace. There's not a sense of wholeness. But when that half step is overcome and it becomes in harmony again, then there's wholeness. You see, our sin is that half step. It's not who we are. It's not the piece of music that God wrote. He's created an incredible symphony. And so we don't identify ourselves with that half step off. We identify ourselves with that score of music that God has created. And you might think to yourself, oh, that's just a mind trick, Father. It's not. It is essential to the human spiritual journey. Because until we enter into our identity, that strength, as God has given it to us, bestowed it upon us, we'll never be anything more than the flesh.